Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Next week, Juno comes to life. But the mood this year will be decidedly different. COVID is in the backdrop, budget battles are looming, and through all of that, the legislature has yet to organize. But joining us now to help us navigate through these uncertain times, two of the state's top political reporters, Andrew Kitchenman with KTOO and Alaska Public Media, and James Brooks with the Anchorage Daily News. Well, thank you both for joining us. I know that you guys are just revving up, but maybe we could start off if you could talk a little bit, and we'll start with you, Andrew. Why is it that you enjoy covering politics? You must, because it's so punishing.
Well, you know, I love politics because it connects back to policy and what the government does and how it affects people's lives. And so I really like to follow the debates where different politicians have different ideas about what the government should do. And that's really interesting for me.
To me, politics is a lot about personality and kind of knowing the personalities and sort of trying to anticipate how they might vote on a policy or what their positions might be. How about you, James? What is it about this grueling profession? Because I know from here on out, you're going to be having 16-hour days probably. What is it that keeps you in it?
For me, it's finding out what's coming next and why it matters for folks across the state. And there's not that many of us who do it, so it matters a whole heck of a lot because the decisions that'll be made over the next few months are going to matter to everyone in the state. It might not be immediately. It might not be you wake up tomorrow and things are all of a sudden different. But things can change pretty quickly. Might not be days, but it could be months or years that the decisions that are made now matter.
You know, and sometimes as we cover stories, you think about the millions, billions sometimes of dollars that are at stake, and you're covering these stories that can have a lot of sway, not intentionally, but just the nature of the coverage could make a big difference in the outcome of what happens. Do you ever think about that, about how much money is involved in politics?
For me, I tend to think of it as people's work. Like money is just a representation of the hours you put in at work. So whether you're flipping burgers or you're working on the pipeline, the taxes you pay may not. I mean, that's your work. That money that's being spent is you.
How about you, Andrew?
Well, I think that as far as how we cover it, I think that, you know, my goal is just to be fair, to accurately represent, if there are two sides to an issue, both sides of the issue, and to try to report it in a way where both sides would be able to recognize their own position in how I report it. And I feel if I've done that, then I've served the public and the audience, and they're receiving the information that they need to understand both what's happening and, you know, who's doing it and why they're doing it.
You know, sometimes there's more than two sides. Sometimes there are many sides, and Alaska issues are not easy. You know, when you're talking about oil revenue, oil taxes, sometimes they can be very arcane. And so both of you have daily stories. Is that a lot of pressure to digest all that information and make it absorbable?
Well, I can take that. I would say for me as an audio reporter, as someone who works frequently in the medium of radio, it's particularly challenging because these issues are very, very complex and you're trying to explain them in terms that people are absorbing maybe as they're driving or as they're engaged in another activity. And I just, you know, it's something that you build over experience where I think it's really important for me to understand exactly where people are coming from because I have to really boil it down in a way that is going to be understandable and in a more simplified format. And so that's a real challenge because the issues are so complex, but I've been doing it for a while now and generally get positive feedback as far as how I do that job.
Well, you know, there is an art to it because sometimes there's a big, thick document and you've got to boil it down into 30 seconds, a minute, and so that people can absorb it, but people don't have time to read those documents. So it's a real public service to be able to spell these complicated things out clearly. What do you think are going to be some of your challenges this year, Andrew, in trying to help people understand what's at stake this session, especially with the budget?
Well, that gets into the general uncertainty about this session. We don't know who's going to be making the key decisions. Often, it's the leadership of the legislature that decides so much about what the legislature focuses on in the course of legislation, what committees things will go to, and whether bills will be heard on the floor. And none of that is known right now because we don't know who's going to form the majority caucuses in both chambers as of today. So that will be a real challenge in reporting until we know a lot more. And then it will really depend on who's making those calls as to what kind of bills we're going to see and how the key legislative committees will be spending their time.
No, normally by this time, you know, the legislature is organized. I know 2 years ago, the House had kind of fits and starts. But normally, you know, you've got the majority leaders, you've got committee assignments. Why do you think that it's not gelling this year? How about you, James? What do you think?
Rhonda, if you were asking me to guess and to speculate on this, from what I know, it's because there's not money, honestly. That's the big thing. It's a lot easier to make those decisions when the question is, how much are we going to spend and what are we going to add money to? And until lately, that's been the question. But now it's like, okay, what are we going to cut? What are we going to not do? And that's a much harder question.
So what is the potential fallout from the legislature not being organized by this point? Because with the budget issues and certainly a permanent fund dividend debate coming up, the legislature has a lot of heavy lifting to do this session. Andrew?
Yeah, I
James, either one, go for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just talked to CBC UConn yesterday in Whitehorse about this very thing. And I know Andrew has been around where the state, as have I, at times when the states come pretty darn close to a government shutdown. And the longer we go without leadership, the longer it's going to take to put together a budget. And the closer we're going to get to that. That's one possible consequence.
Another big challenge is that almost all of these issues ultimately reflect on policy. And if you're going to make any policy changes, it takes a lot of time in the legislature to do policy legislation on top of, as you've already mentioned, Rhonda, the budget. The budget bill is going to be the absolute focus. But with these huge, huge challenges facing the state, there is a lot of interest in trying to tackle policy issues like the permanent fund dividend formula. And to take on something like that would probably take weeks and weeks of hearings. And the longer we wait, the harder that is. But that just will increase the pressure next year, which is an election year. So I guess there's also the possibility of special sessions or at least one special session later this year. So a lot of uncertainty right now.
Well, how much padding, Andrew, does the legislature have this year with delays? Do they have enough to squeak by if they dig into savings, maybe use some earnings? Can they finesse plans for a mega dividend and do it all this year? Maybe?
If they're going to protect the permanent funds earnings reserve, the key savings account that's left for the state, then they don't have any padding, and there isn't any room for everything that you just said. Now, if they decide to open up the permanent fund earnings reserve in a way that the state has never done in all of the years of the permanent fund, then there's a lot more leeway to have a big dividend. But the dividend is a really crucial issue right now because we've never gone below the range of 1,000 or close to 1,000 in inflation adjusted terms in decades and decades. And there isn't enough money in all the other savings accounts to have $1,000 dividend next year, in 2021, like we had in 2020. And even that was, of course, a lot lower than what we've been having the last few years. So it's a really tough situation.
From your perspective, James, how is it going to be to cover that issue? And will it be a difficult story to articulate to people?
I think you have to, first you have to explain why it matters and then where things are before you can explain what the options are. And so one thing that I find myself struggling with is to remind myself that not everybody reads everything, and I need to lay the groundwork every time before going in. We get to what I'm about those decisions, because we have to explain why it matters and where we're coming from before we can explain where we're going.
So are we, James, do you think at a crossroads this year? I mean, every year we say that we're at a crossroads, but is this really, really, I guess, to use a cliche, where the rubber meets the road this year?
Depends who you ask. I mean, Andrew was saying that there are, if you wanted to spend the money is there in the permanent fund, but you'll have long-term consequences. Like, you could pay a supersized dividend, but you're going to pay for it later rather than right now. And so in that sense, this is a decision point. Like, there are no decisions without side effects anymore. There's no easy savings accounts to go into. And so, yeah, in that sense, there absolutely is a decision point this year.
And there's so much rhetoric around the permanent fund dividend, and some of it's highly charged, you know, phrases like stealing people's money and things like that. It could get highly charged, you know, and you almost wonder if some of the unrest at the nation's capital and, you know, angst over the permanent fund dividend, if some of that could get conflated and we could see a more charged year than usual. What do you think, James?
Absolutely. That's something I've been asking folks about as I talk to them about organization. I'm asking about, okay, how have things changed, or have they changed since January 6th and the riot at the Capitol? And what I've been hearing from Republicans mainly is that no, not in general, because our fights have been about the dividend and not so much about Trump or Biden or election fraud here in the state, because Republicans support Trump. I mean, and so the arguments are about the dividend and the budget instead here. You know, and that they're separate things.
You know, James, I was watching cable news, and your story about Lisa Murkowski supporting an impeachment vote got read. There was an excerpt from your story read. I said, I know that guy. So, you know, it must have, you know, we're still digesting things like this. But maybe the bigger question for Alaskans is that Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan and Don Young are not going to be in majorities, where in the past, you know, they were in key committee positions and they were able to bring our state money. And that helps supplement the state budget, whether we like to admit it or not. James?
Well, and I would just point out that programs targeted nationally are still going to send money to Alaska. I mean, you saw President-elect Joe Biden announce a $1.9 trillion coronavirus aid package, and that's going to send a lot of money to the state if it passes in its current form, whether or not our delegation is in the majority or minority.
So I guess if we have to lose a majority in Congress and in the Senate, then maybe this is not a bad time to do it. But certainly COVID complicates things. Andrew, how do you see COVID complicating this session, adding just another layer of difficulty?
What we don't know is how the leadership will be handling COVID, because we don't know who the leadership is going to be, and the leadership really decides things like safety rules. So we have safety rules that have been put in place by the outgoing leadership of the outgoing legislature. And we don't know, for instance, how it will affect committee schedules or even the length of the session. You know, there could be some effort to have a shorter session or to hold committee meetings in a different format. And all of that is uncertain right now. So it will be interesting to follow in the coming days and weeks as that evolves.
So how about media access? Will you guys be down in the little press room? That doesn't seem like a very COVID-friendly environment to be working in.
Not at all. Yeah, I do want to be in the building every day as much as I can. But I also do not want to be in the building just sitting around. And that's a tough thing because often just being in the Capitol is the way that you learn things. But I don't feel like it's going to be a particularly safe environment, even if they do everything they can, just due to the number of people, the close quarters, and the fact that people are coming from around the state. But yeah, it's going to be a really different year, but I do plan to be in the Capitol every day.
Well, you know, you can get a lot by being physically in the Capitol, just reading people. James, are you going to miss having less access this year than in past years?
Well, let me take a step back and say I'm taking a different approach from Andrew. I'm talking to you from the press room in the Capitol right now. I'm going in there regularly. I do feel pretty confident in the COVID precautions, especially once we're several weeks into session, assuming they continue in their current format and travel's done and people are generally staying put. I mean, some legislators will go home for the weekends as they normally do, but I do think the testing requirements, the screenings are as good as you can get in the state right now.
Do you think that that's going to add a level of stress to lawmakers? Because you got a new batch of lawmakers in there. They've got to learn new things, get used to each other. How do you think that's going to play with them?
I think that there's the potential for some lawmakers to buck the rules and then cause friction that way. Yes, I do.
What about you, Andrew? What do you think?
Yeah, I think a lot of the new lawmakers, I think, are not as concerned about the really strict rules. So they are maybe not going to be intentionally limiting themselves.
So we're about wrapping things up here. Any thoughts or concerns about the coming session that you'd like to share, Andrew?
Well, I would say that 2 years ago, we waited a month for the House to organize, and it certainly would not feel very productive for Alaska if it took a similar lengthy amount of time for either chamber to organize this year. Of course, everything could be resolved any minute, so we don't know. And that's the immediate concern today.
James?
I'd say, as Andrew said, if the deadlock continues, especially if it continues in both the House and the Senate past the first day of session, I mean, expect a long legislative session, potentially special sessions after the regular session expires.
Oh, boy. Well, I do know what you said is true, that when you don't have enough money, it definitely lengthens the debate and lengthens the session. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where we go with that. But do you think that this session, we will see something productive come out of it? Do you see any potential for that to settle some long-term issues?
It'll be interesting to see if Governor Dunleavy signals an interest in major legislative changes in state policy. He's been very, very focused on getting some constitutional amendments passed that he sees as sort of laying the groundwork for his other priorities in the future of the state. But they haven't made any progress in the last couple of years. And if he sort of is focused on that happening first, then it may be challenging to make other policy changes before that.
And also, I might point out, is the recall group is revving up again. I know that the COVID problems sort of sidelined that debate, but it potentially could come back again. How might that affect the session, James?
That's definitely the wild card in all this. They're 22,000 signatures out. Given the pace that they worked last year during the pandemic, I'm not all that optimistic about that, but I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. It could be a significant deal. It could be nothing at this point.
Well, what I always love is that every year something different happens, something you don't expect in the legislature, don't you think? I mean, based on the time you've covered it, that there's always these wild cards that pop out.
Yeah, each year is different.
Yeah.
Each year there's no two sessions are the same.
So that's why we've got to keep an eye on things. I really want to thank you both, Andrew Kitchenman with KTOO and Alaska Public Media, and James Brooks with the Anchorage Daily News. Thanks, and good luck.
Thank you.